This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we have two reactions to recent executive orders by President Trump. Coming up, parents at a school in Kalamazoo have come together over fears about the Trump administration, especially on immigration. We'll hear from one of the organizers. But first, a conversation with Habib Mandwi. He came to the United States in 1980, started businesses, including Tiffany's Wine and Spirit Shop and the restaurants Zaruna and Rustica, and along the way became a United States citizen. Thank you very much for being here.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Where were you born?
I was born in Iraq, in a small town called Kirkuk, which is north of Iraq. I was there for that time.
Yeah. When did you come to the United States?
I came in 1980. To go to Western Michigan University.
And when you came to Kalamazoo and to Western Michigan University, was your plan to go to school and stay here, or was the plan to go to school, graduate, and go back?
Yeah, no, I was planning just to get admitted to Western Michigan University and just came to go to school, and then I go back to Iraq at that time. That was my plan.
So what changed along the way?
Well, what changed is that in 1980, that the war started with Iran, and all the funds got stopped, that I couldn't get any more funds. And so therefore, I decided to stay here and pursue my entrepreneurial dream.
Did you feel welcome in the United States in those early years?
Yeah. I was young and energetic. Me and my brother, Saad, we both were very energetic and friendly to people. And I was like, this is great. I mean, you know, people love to buy wine and beer, and they just love us. And like, I'm surprised. I should love them. And so it was fantastic. It was a good business to be in a college, university. And, you know, at that time was a lot of fraternities and all that. And we were making friends left and right, and I felt really good. I had to know what the peak of the business is. I mean, I didn't know when the football, when we had a home game, that means it's a lot of beer.
Saturday,
that was
yeah.
Shocking to me. Like, oh my gosh, what is this? Why people, that's all they drink. So it was interesting. I had to learn all that. But I always felt welcome. That's great.
When did you become a United States citizen?
1986.
What's that process like to go through? Explain it to someone like myself who was born here and so citizenship by birth.
Well, basically you go take a, I remember taking a test that, some kind of a test about the history of the United States. You apply for it and you have a written test you take, which is it teaches you or tell you about the history of the United States and the constitutions and what is it, the judicial system and all that. It was fascinating to me. I knew about it then anyway. I was hooked in New York Times, actually, and Newsweek, and I still do. I read them regularly. So that was the process. And then, you know, you go in front of a person, and they test you, and they know your language. And then from there, you go to the ceremony, and the ceremony was a beautiful thing. It was a festival, and at that time it hit me really hard when I really have to take the oath and to say I am, you know, I'm part of this country and I'm taking the oath to be part of this country, to defend it for the good and the bad. And it hit me really hard. It hit me like I am part of this, you know, dream. I'm part of becoming part of other country that that I should really defend. And I cherish that oath, and I still feel like yesterday, and it was a great day for me.
So I have to ask you then what you thought when this order came down that President Trump issued saying that that immigration was going to be banned from these seven particular countries, including, of course, Iraq, where you were born.
Yeah. It was kind of shocking to me. We were following the campaign, all of us who really immigrants or that we were following to know there's a lot of regulation might be coming for the immigrations. A lot of my friends, they said, well, if Trump wins, then we don't know what's going to happen, which is understandable, but mainly because of the campaign at that time. But I would not expect it, or we did not expect to come this fast, this quick, and in this kind of fashion. We thought it would be gradual, so everybody will have an idea what is going to happen. But this came kind of a shock in to a lot of us, a lot of us who really immigrants or have families abroad, that they felt like if this is the beginning, I don't know what else is going to come. And the uncertainty of it and the vagueness of the order itself, that all of us, we're a little bit confused with this. But I think we have to be a little bit more careful, and we have to wait and see what exactly is going to transpire out of that.
Do you worry, though, that somebody who is 18 years old and is in the same position now that you were in back in 1980 might be facing a different set of circumstances in terms of wanting to come to the United States to go to college and maybe make a life here, that perhaps some roadblocks are being put up that are going to make it more difficult for someone else to live the life you've been able to lead?
Yeah, it is more difficult now. I mean, granted, a lot of immigrants and immigration is becoming kind of a high topic now. We all realize that now we have a lot more immigrants than there used to be. But also, I mean, we also think a lot of time we think this is the world becoming smaller and smaller. I mean, it used to be so hard to really know where is, for example, Iraq and where is other countries. Now, you know, Google, you see it. So you feel closer than you used to. During my 37 years been here now, I've seen a lot of people who came after me, and they're established themselves. They're very successful. They have done so much to our community. They have done a lot of good work, and that feel that we're really very good proud of. We all realize it's going to be not as easy, and we know that the immigration matter is becoming more and more difficult, but we still like this country, and it's still a lot of us who really come here. They have a dream to pursue, and they have a good reason to come here and be part of this melting pot country, and we advocate to that, and this is what America, we think, is all about, and I think it is it's a good thing.
Do you still feel as welcome here as you did, say, 15 years ago, or maybe at the time you became a citizen, or do some of the things you see with some of the reaction that people have where they're concerned about immigrants coming, and perhaps some of the rhetoric, does that ever make you feel not quite as welcome as you did before?
Truly, I have to say the truth about this. I never not ever felt very nervous than ever before. I'd be lying if I say I don't. I do. I used to say I'm proud, I'm a foreigner, I speak two different languages, and everybody's like, wow, this is nice, interesting. Even if I go to any other beyond my community who really do not know me, and they say, wow, this is great. This is nice that we very welcome you. Now I see silence and not necessarily like question that I not used to. What religion are you from? I never heard that before. What country are you from? These questions that I ask, not a part of like, this is interesting. Now I'm getting these questions directly to me. I never had that before.
When would you say that started?
Really recently.
Since the election?
Yeah, it is recently. I was another part in conference. And as soon as they see my accent, they're like, okay, where are you from? And that's the question a lot of time I never had that. Like, instead of talking about subject, where are you from and what religion are you? I was like, oh, okay, I'm Iraqi and I'm Mandian, which that's what my religion is.
So you were actually traveling. You were outside the United States, I understand it, when this executive order came down. So tell our audience what happened as you were coming back to the United States. You were coming back from the Dominican Republic,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I was, I go to Dominican every January and February. And this time it was kind of a little bit different. I came back, and it was, I was stopped by me and my wife. I stopped at the check to the immigration officer, and he was asking me a question usually not part of the norm. You know, your name and then your what country you were born. I was like, well, in Iraq, because it's shown the passport. And how long were you there? And what do you do? I'm a businessman. What kind of businesses? Well, I own real estates and restaurants and wine shop. and who are you friends and with? Well, I was in a conference. So questions I have not, it happened to be a week before that I was in Dominican. I came from Dominican. I stayed 3 days and I went back. And I did not have these kind of questions. And I didn't realize, and I looked at my wife like, this is a little bit more than the usual. And then I went on home, and then I turned the news, actually the following morning, because I arrived like at 2 o'clock in the morning, realized this is an order. Now, I'm not sure if this is related to it or not. I can't say, but I kind of, I do not know. I can't say.
But you somewhat regularly travel outside the United States?
Yeah.
You said you go to the Dominican Republic usually once a year?
Yeah, once or two times a year, and I travel. I usually expect this to be, if I'm come from the Middle East or go to Dubai or I go to Europe, I expect that. But from the Dominican, generally, people don't look at the Middle Eastern coming from there. Really, they hardly have anyone. So I'm presuming maybe because the order was delivered or was executed that day and was immediately, I'm thinking like this is how could be, but I can't say this is the case.
But regularly, when you come back to the United States, is it a fairly routine process? Or, I mean, has there been maybe another time or two when it was similar to what you just had coming back from the Dominican Republic?
Sometimes. Again, if I come from, I recall coming from Amman at that time, from Syria, before the war started in Syria, I will be singled out and like, you know, what do you do and what is it you're... what's your professions and all that? It happened in the past before, coming from Canada, actually, and I get questions. Generally, once they know, they speak to me, they know what I do and all that, they understand. The age has to do with it. I feel I don't fit the criteria of younger kids, and so hopefully they think I'm not as threat to them. I respect that. I respect. They do their job, and I appreciate that.
So what do you hope, I guess, happens going forward? What do you see as sort of the best case scenario for, again, that young man or that young woman right now who is in Iraq or one of these other countries? What do you think is the best thing that we might be able to say in 6 months or a year for them in terms of that they can come over here and they can go to school, they can start a business, and yet at the same time, as you say, you want people to do their job and try to keep out someone who would come to the United States to do us harm?
Well, I mean, majority of people come here because they have opportunity for business and they really don't want to do any harm. I mean, I'm involved with my church. I'm involved with Arab American Association. I'm involved with a lot of organizations that I know of. Most people, they just left prosecutions. Countries are torn in war, and they are here to start a business or do what they have to do. I feel that they deserve that chance like everybody else who have had it in the past. I think they deserve to really giving that opportunity to give back to us and to improve our... We are here to be part of this community. Now we have to be more vigilant than before. We have to prove ourselves more than before. And I say that to all my people, like, now it's not the same as you used to. Try to avoid being in trouble. Do pay your taxes. It's unfortunately the politics got more involved in this. And unfortunately, the reputation of our countries in the back that gave us this bad reputation. But we as citizen, as a human, as people, we have nothing to do with it. We're here to work and raise family and add good value to this country.
Habib Mandwi, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Habib Mandwi is a native of Iraq. He moved to the United States in 1980, has been a citizen since 1986. He's also the owner of Tiffany's Wine and Spirit Shop, as well as two Kalamazoo restaurants, Saruna and Rustica. There's a longer version of the interview with Habib Mandwi that can be found at WMUK.org.
This is West Southwest. I'm Sevilla Mann. Many parents of students at El Sol Elementary see the election of Donald Trump as a crisis. El Sol is a public school in Kalamazoo where students learn in English and Spanish. Some families have concerns about their immigration or resident status. Others fear for people they know and the cultural openness the school represents. Allison Parsons is an El Sol parent and a licensed clinical social worker, which is to say, a therapist. We spoke at her office in Kalamazoo about what happened when parents started to turn to each other for support. Allison Parsons, welcome to West Southwest.
Thank you for having me.
We're just going to explain at the beginning here that you are speaking as yourself, an El Sol parent, and you've been organizing with some other parents, but you're not speaking for the district, Kalamazoo Public Schools, or El Sol, and you're not speaking for all the parents at the school either.
That's correct.
What was the mood like at El Sol as you saw it following the election of Donald Trump as president?
So the Wednesday morning after the election, I dropped my son off at school and was really touched and impacted as I walked down the hallway past the first graders and could see the kindergartners, and there were tears. As I got up to the second grade floor, a child who has a locker next to my son looked at me and he said, he kind of took a deep breath and he looked at me and he said, "Mr. Trump's our president." I said, "Yeah." And he said, "He doesn't like Mexicans." And I kind of grimaced a little bit. And he said, "What does that mean for me?" With these huge eyes and tearing up a little bit. And I just reached over and gave him a hug. The kids on that floor were talking about war. And I heard them saying, "This is going to be World War III." I think they were probably reflecting some of the language of "we need to fight" or whatever might they maybe had heard. As I walked back down, I was hearing kids talk about, "They're going to build a wall. Are they going to take my friends away?" As reports came in from other parents, they were talking about the fact that their kids were just dumbstruck. They couldn't believe it in the morning. And some kids were really afraid that somebody was going to physically come into the classroom and remove their friends, remove families. And there was just a collective feeling of just shock. As I wandered out, because I didn't stay up that night. I decided I had to go to bed. I couldn't babysit it anymore. I was just, whatever happened, happened. And I made a point of not rolling over in the middle of the night and checking my Facebook feed or any kind of news feed when I did roll over. And so I was also in shock and hadn't really had a chance to process it myself. And as I walked out, a good friend came up and found me and just gave me a huge hug. And I started tearing up. And then I bumped into another friend who is of Mexican origin, and we started talking about his personal experience and his fears and how it extended. He's a citizen, but sort of how it extended to the community that he knew about. And it was just one of the things for me that was so telling was this need to connect was what I really noticed and felt throughout the day.
It would seem like El Sol would be a place where this talk of building a wall between the U.S. and Mexico, or certainly deporting people who are here without papers, that would really hit hard.
Absolutely. I think that there's some misunderstandings in the community about what El Sol is. And so I've heard we're fairly new to this community, and I've heard people say things like, "Oh, that's the place where the Hispanic kids go." But my experience as a parent there is that there are an awful lot of parents who have chosen this school specifically because of the language component, knowing that as the demographics of the United States change, we're going to have more Spanish speakers in this country, and it's going to help our kids be marketable in the long run to actually have a second language. We are one of the only countries in the world that's not multilingual, and English is actually not our standard language.
It's not an official language. It's not the official language of the United States.
Right.
Is English. We don't have an official language.
We don't have an official language in this country. And so we chose this school in part because it's a neighborhood school for us. It's in our neighborhood. But more importantly, as children learn a language, they actually learn a culture. And I'm not talking about a specific culture like Mexican culture. They learn a broader understanding of the world, so a multicultural component, because as we know, Spanish as a language covers many, many cultures.
Well, it would seem then, as an El Sol parent, that the concern, well, I should say that there's concern and then that there's fear, that it's kind of on two levels. There's concern about, are these policies that are being promoted at the highest national level now in our best interest? But as you described too, there's just some fear among the children that this is going to, if it's not exaggerating, to tear their world apart.
Yeah, and I know there are families who have moved and who moved that first week. There are families who are in the process of leaving the United States. There are families who are probably not sleeping at night for fear of what may happen with immigration. And we're not just talking about the Latino community. We are talking about people who have green cards who maybe aren't Latino. We're talking about families who've made choices. A number of us went to Lansing, to the Women's March in Lansing, and there were families who made choices to not attend because they have a green card and didn't want to take a chance that they might get arrested if it went bad for some reason. They're just, people are making regular choices on a daily basis based on this immigration discussion that's happening at the federal level.
And that's happening within the El Sol community.
Absolutely, yes. There's a number of families who are able to, parents who are involved, and so as parents talk, you get to share stories. As we've come to get to know one another better, we hear more and more personal stories of how people are impacted. And I was sharing with my friends that my father lives in Thailand, my brother lives in the UK, and I grew up in Southeast Asia. I was in Southeast Asia in the 80s when we bombed Libya, and at my school, they put two buses in front of the gate, and there were kids who were not, American kids who were not allowed to come to school for a few weeks because it was dangerous to be an American in a country that is not a danger generally for Americans. At that time when we traveled, we didn't carry American passports. My father carried them, held all the risk, and used a UN passport because it was dangerous. I worry daily about my family overseas, and I'm a Caucasian. And that's just my little end of the story. They can travel safely at this point. But what I think people don't realize is the ramifications of these decisions have so many ripple effects.
You said that right away after the election, what you felt was a desire for community and to connect. And so where has that gone?
When we're in times of stress, our body, our brain releases oxytocin, which is the connection chemical. And the reason for that is that we know that as human beings, we're a communal species, and we can't get along alone. And I was reflecting after that day on how deeply I felt the need to connect with my community. And it occurred to us to start by having a gathering. And so we had a house party and invited as many people as we could just meet and see face to face to come and to start to just say, hey, are you interested in trying to build a community and get to know one another better? Because we realized it's really hard to help and protect if you don't know what people's needs are, you know. And the nature of schools is people are coming and going. You might not get a chance to really know other parents. So out of that, we've had a couple of meetings. We have actually monthly gatherings in different people's homes and their potlucks. Kids come, the kids get to play, the parents get to meet and talk and do some organizing. We had a community gathering at the Hispanic American Council just before Christmas. It was just a potluck, and we had about 80 people show up, which was really exciting. And the feedback from that was so exciting because people were saying, I think they made a commitment, not because we had asked them to, but they made a commitment to really get to know one another. So instead of just talking about how kids are doing in school or the surface level conversations, people were really engaged and asking questions of each other. And at one point I walked by a table and there was two gentlemen talking, and I was like, oh my goodness, you guys know each other. How cool is that? Like, tell me about your connection. And they said, no, we really just met tonight, but we actually work in the same company and we've never overlapped. Wow. And so it was just one of those moments. And that was the kind of like connections were being made. So we have decided to continue to do that. We've connected with our PTO to do regular, they're called cafecita, which are coffee hours. So once a month, we're going to have a coffee hour in the library for parents to come and get to know one another. And we've made a commitment to quarterly bigger gatherings at some place like HAC, the Hispanic American Council. And then we're going to continue to do monthly meetings and see what makes sense and what needs to be done.
Have you so far done any sort of traditional, what you might think of as organizing or activism, going to like talk to your congressperson, for example?
We have not gotten to that point. Really, in the gathering of people who've been there, what we've come up with is that really the thing that seems to work for this particular community is about getting to know one another and building community. There is a group of us who have taken it into more of the advocacy component. And so at our next meeting, there is some talk about getting together and doing a letter writing or postcard writing campaign. What I'm seeing is that it's been about more about disseminating information for the people who want to know what's happening in the community, where can they go. And so we have been telling people about the ID initiative through the county commission.
This is the proposal to create a local ID card for the county for folks who can't get a state ID. And sometimes that's, well, it's because you don't have the paperwork to get a state ID, and that can be for various reasons. But one reason can be that you don't have paper showing you're here legally.
Yes, it's an area of interest for our community. And so we've been encouraging people to attend, to have their voices heard. And so as events like that or as issues like that are coming to the table, we're letting people know as best we can.
Have you seen the tone shift either among children or parents as you do this kind of community pulling together?
It depends on the day. There were tears on the playground yesterday as the kids were playing after school on the adult side. It's really difficult, I think, to not feel like we're being bombarded. And I get the sense as I'm listening to the news and reading the news and ensuring that I'm getting it from many, many different sources, that many people are feeling this in the country, that every time we turn around, every time we turn anything on, there is another piece of something that's challenging our constitutional rights, our democracy as we know it. And so some days and some moments, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed and scared and really deeply scared. And then we get together and support one another and talk to one another and bring our focus on our own families and the families that we know and the community as a whole. And many, many people show up at a meeting for KPS. And that helps us to feel like, hey, we're in this together. And that's ultimately what we're really trying to develop.
Allison Parsons, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Allison Parsons is a parent at El Sol Elementary in Kalamazoo. She's also a licensed clinical social worker. We spoke at her office about how parents of students at El Sol have responded to the Trump presidency. This is West Southwest. I'm Sevilla Mann.